Will you pray with me? Lord, now may the words of my mouth and may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. On the afternoon of the first day of daylight saving time when I was 18, my friends invited me on my first ever mountain hike. I remember what day it was because the whole idea was that with the sun setting an hour later than usual, we would have time to make it up to the top and back before dark. I didn't grow up around the mountains, and the only hiking I had ever done up to that point had been through the woods and across the occasional stream, but nothing vertical and nothing particularly treacherous other than the possible rattlesnake. But as a freshman at a college nestled in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, I had been gazing at those soft blue peaks the whole school year, and I was eager to get to the top of one of them and see what it was like. So when I was invited, I said yes, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into. The 3.5 mile hike up to the top was far more strenuous than I had imagined, at least on this particular mountain. There were incredibly steep inclines. There were surprisingly narrow passages. There was sliding gravel. And we even had to occasionally scale a rock. I was not prepared. And it was very scary. I was the only freshman in the group, and I was the only one in the group who had not done this before. I was slow, and I fell behind, and I became overwhelmed and extremely discouraged. The path eventually got tough enough that I started thinking I could just stop. I didn't have to go to the top. I could just stay where I was and wait and let my friends go up and come back, and I would just join them on the way down. But my friend Mark insisted I could do it. He was an experienced outdoorsman, and he had hiked the trail many times before, and he knew I was struggling, and he kept reminding me I was not alone, and I didn't have to do this alone. And he dropped back to do it with me. He was a kind of sweeper to make sure that the last person made it up the mountain all right. And every single time I stopped and said, I can't, or I'll just wait here, you go on, he urged me on with words he knew by heart. He said, I lift my eyes up to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. He had me repeat it back to him over and over till I knew it too. And then as we hiked, still pretty slowly, he would ask the question, and I would give the answer. And I would ask the question, and he would give the answer. And we would say the question together, and we would say the answer together. Now, of course, when I actually did lift my eyes, which wasn't very often because I wanted to make sure I didn't twist an ankle and fall, when I did actually lift my eyes, I couldn't actually see the top of the mountain. I couldn't see much of anything of what was coming next. I could see the trees, and I could see the path, and I could see the gravel and my feet. But I kept saying the words with him anyway. We kept asking ourselves and each other where our help came from. And the answer kept coming out of my mouth, out of his mouth. My help comes from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. We just kept saying the words together, almost like a song, over and over again, all the way to the top. The words Mark taught me that day were from Psalm 121, which we said together a few moments ago. It's also called a psalm for travelers. It's part of a collection of 15 psalms known as the Songs of Ascent, a collection of psalms originally recited by pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem. Each psalm in the collection is short enough to be memorized, which makes it possible for travelers to know it and to recite it as they travel. And you can imagine it, a group of travelers making pilgrimage to Jerusalem, making their way through the desert, through the wilderness, together, over hills, through small villages. From time to time, they sing together or recite prayers together. And the psalms that they've learned provide a kind of liturgy for the desert. A single voice rises up with a question. I lift my eyes up to the hills. Where does my help come from? And the question resonates with the travelers. The mountains were a place of danger. The terrain was difficult. There were wild animals. There were bandits hiding in the hills. But the mountains also symbolized divine presence. The pilgrims heading towards Jerusalem, challenged by their journey, would lift their eyes and see Mount Zion in the distance. And they would remember the history of God's help, the history of God's faithfulness through the generations, of God's gracious, protective presence in the wilderness and beyond. So the mountains represented two things at the same time: danger and divine presence. The place that posed the biggest threat also offered the great promise. God is present in the midst of everything we fear. I lift my eyes up to the mountains, a voice in the crowd asks. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the same voice responds, maker of heaven and earth. And then the crowd joins in, offering their blessing together. God will not let your foot be moved. God who keeps you will not slumber. God who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. God will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time on and forevermore. The danger in the wilderness is undeniably real. A stumbling foot, the relentless sun, the threat of hidden menace. But the community speaks the blessing and the promise. God will not sleep. The Lord will keep you. And did you hear the drumbeat in that promise? There's one word that sounds over and over again. Keep, 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 keep. Six times in six verses, that same word, keep. And the word in Hebrew for keep means a strong presence of help. It's used almost exclusively for God in the Old Testament, though it is used of one person in particular when God says to Adam, "I will make you someone to help, your helpmate, your keeper," which is Eve. But usually it's for God who will keep with this strong presence. The psalm begins with a question and ends with a blessing. And at its center is this declaration: the Lord is your keeper, a strong, present help. This is the simple, gorgeous profession of faith at the heart of this psalm: God's pervasive, persistent, protecting presence. And the psalm widens that promise of that presence like a shelter over all of time. The promise of God's provision is not for a single trip. It's for the whole journey of life. The final verse makes it clear that this is the real journey, the real pilgrimage. Life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time and forevermore. The opening question is limited to a place. I look at the hills. Where does my help come from? But the closing blessing is loosened, set loose from all time and all place. This help, this presence is for now and is forever. No beginning, no end, no place, no time, no circumstance, no threat, no fear can separate the pilgrim from the presence of God. The help we need comes not from the hills, but from the one who made the hills. These words are more than a prayer. They're a promise, a reminder that the God of the universe, maker of heaven and earth, is with us, is for us, will keep us. The God of the cosmos and of all of history is also the God who keeps your life and mine. And for the pilgrims on the way to Jerusalem, the remembrance of this was not a matter of individual devotion, of individual faith. It was a collective remembrance. It was a collective trust. It was prompted by communal singing, by communal reciting of the Psalms, the song of promise, the song we most need in the wilderness, is the one we sing together as we walk together, as we work together, as we make our way forward together on the journey. A few years ago, on a youth mission trip out west, we had this psalm as our trip theme. On our first day in Wyoming, we were traveling north on I-80, when the highway was closed due to a serious accident. So we had to take a detour, and the detour we took led us to a dirt road, and then from that dirt road to another one and to another one, until we found ourselves all alone in the kind of desert, driving along something that wasn't actually even a road, as it turned out. It was very narrow, about the width of our van. It was treacherous and torturous, and it went along a kind of hilly path for about 2 miles, and on either side was a washed-out ditch quite far down from the road we were on. We knew as soon as we got on to this path that it was a mistake. I wasn't driving, by the way, at this point. We knew it was a mistake, but there was no turning back because there was actually no way to turn around. We had to just keep going forward. And as one of the other adults drove, I, sitting in the next row behind, squeezed my eyes shut, clamped my hands in a death grip on the seat in front of me, and started saying, "I lift my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from?" I was not lifting my eyes or my heart. I had my head bowed. I was saying the psalm through gritted teeth. And sometimes that's the way it is. We're scared. We can't find a way to look up. Can't find a way to lift our hearts. Can't find a way to feel like we actually trust. We just hold on and get through as best we can. Our little mission team made it through our wild ride just fine, got to our destination. And after a week of work, on our last day in Wyoming, we went to Yellowstone. On our way towards the park, we came around a curve, and all of us at the same time laid eyes on the Grand Tetons for the first time. And we all gasped. The view absolutely took our breath away. It turns out that awe and wonder come more easily when we see the mountains from a distance than when we are actually on the wild path trying to find a safe way to the top. We drove on to Yellowstone, and at the end of our day there, we visited Old Faithful. And we sat there together and waited, watching this hole in the ground, knowing what to expect, but also not knowing what to expect. We were sitting there because a little sign had told us what time the water would shoot up in the air. And then all of a sudden, it did. It did at the exact time we were told it would. Old Faithful is called eternity's timepiece because of how exact it is, because of how exceptionally predictable it is, erupting reliably, not on an hourly schedule, not according to our clocks, but according to a simple mathematical model. And it's been doing this since at least 1870 when it was discovered, but probably for a lot longer than that. For how many centuries has hot water been bursting from the earth in that spot, reliably, predictably, with no one but the elk and the bears, the moose and the eagles, the rocks and the hills to witness it? We sat there and watched as Old Faithful went off, and the eruption was gigantic. It was stunning. It momentarily blocked out the setting sun in the big sky. It went down, and then it shot back into the sky again. And it went back down, and it shot up again, and again, and again, and again. Absolute reliability. And I realized Old Faithful was singing an ancient wilderness song. That bursting water was keeping time like a drumbeat with one word over and over: keep, keep, keep. The Lord will keep you. Just as faithfully as the water rises from the earth in that spot into the air. So is God's care. Keep, keep, keep. The Lord will keep your life. You can trust it. You can rely on that. The God who made a geyser spring up in the wild before any person could ever lay eyes on it. The God who made the big sky and the faithful moon. The God who made the elk and the eagle and the moose. The God who made the blue hills and the Grand Tetons. That same God, maker of heaven and earth, is still present. Creation bears witness to the faithfulness of its creator. Keep, keep, keep. The God who created it all keeps it all, keeps us, and keeps moving forward through life with us and for us. We are living in a time of significant uncertainty. The news about the global threat of infection changes every day. Our confidence in our leaders is shaky at best. The political landscape of the primary season just keeps shifting in unpredictable ways. Our world can feel like a wilderness. And even apart from the news cycle, our own lives are full of challenges and pressures and treacherous terrain and narrow passageways and things that feel threatening. Life is full of uncertainty, and it can be difficult to feel safe and secure, calm, and at peace. We look around and see many reasons to be scared. And often our response is not to lift our eyes, but to squeeze them shut. We hunker down. We want to shrink into ourselves, burrow into our fear. We lose our perspective. But we are not alone on this journey. We are set within a community of the beloved, and the community is bound not by the temporality of place or time. It stretches back to all the pilgrims who walked through the wilderness before us. It stretches to include all of creation and the wilderness itself. The ancient wilderness song carries the tune of our crucial question, where does my help come from? We lift our eyes. We lift our hearts. We lift our voices to remember and to remind each other again and again. Our help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. The Lord will keep you.